Two parents in Alaska are going to jail because their kids didn't go to school. Good morning, I'm Lori Townsend. Truancy is a big problem for educators in the state. But should parents of chronically absent kids serve time? And what are schools in rural and urban Alaska doing to stay relevant and keep kids engaged? What are the factors that contribute to children being reluctant about attending class? Can parents and other students help? Truancy will discuss it and take your calls on Talk of Alaska statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska, and by Solstice Advertising, bringing creativity to Alaska businesses and nonprofits, from research and strategy to print, web, and broadcast production. Solstice Advertising, an agency for brands that want to shine. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Good morning. Welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend, sitting in for a still vacationing Steve Heimel. We're talking today about truancy in schools, and I have some guests with me today. John Earthman is the DA in Nome. He's joining us with on the phone. Rob Piku is superintendent of the Bering Strait School District. He's also on phone. And Lou Pondofino is the principal at the King Career Center. He's also the Anchorage Principal Association. Are you the executive director, Lou?
The president.
President. Okay. So, good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for joining me. I want to start first with Mr. Earthman from the DA from Nome to kind of lay out the legal landscape for us. John, when does absence become truancy?
Well, there's basically three ways that generally people understand truancy as kids not going to school, you know, and that's whether that's whole days or parts of days. Truancy can result in a parent going to court, though, under three different circumstances. One is as a violation, and that's when a kid misses five full days of school, okay? And you can, once they've missed five full days of school, they can be cited basically with a ticket, and they can be fined up to $500 for that. Excuse me. The next is actually a crime. It's one of the subsections of contributing to the delinquency of a minor, and that's when a parent enables the kid not to go to school. That's kind of the short version of it. A third way that's a little less common, the statutes for neglect actually identifies child neglect to include a parent's failure to provide a child with adequate education. So OCS can also get involved in these cases. So you've got a violation, which the penalty is money, criminal charge where they could get up to a year in jail, and then of course OCS involvement.
And you mentioned 5 days. Is that over what time period? Is that in a month or 5 days in how long?
Yeah, it doesn't really say. What happens when we get these referrals, we get an attendance sheet that basically shows it's like a calendar, and it's marked off with what days the kids didn't go. Some days are full days, some days are partial days. Now, our courts interpret it pretty strictly, so we only count full days that the kids, entire days that they're missing. And there's no particular, it could be over a whole semester of a school year, but usually when you're talking about the kind of kids that are missing the kind of school that gets parents to court, it's, you know, they're missing 5 days a week or 5 days every 2 weeks. It's not intermittent, occasional missing school. It's a regularly occurring absence from school.
And is this the same across the state, or do different districts, different district attorneys apply different standards across the state?
Well, what I just described in shorthand, those are state laws. I mean, those apply across the state. How they're implemented elsewhere would be questions for someone else.
Sure. And how has this changed? You've been there for more than a decade. How have things changed in that regard as far as truancy and how your response to it in the more than a decade that you've been there?
Well, I believe the school folks can tell you. My impression is that truancy is has been a problem, serious truancy, again, not just intermittent or occasional absence from school, serious truancy has been a problem for as long as I've been here. Now, our response to it has changed. When I first showed up, it was pretty intermittent. We would get a referral on somebody and deal with it, you know, kind of in a and deal with it as it came up. And about 3 or 4 years ago, I finally decided that was just simply inadequate. We weren't meeting the problem. And also, when you're talking about a DA's office, particularly a rural DA's office, you know, we handle 800 criminal cases a year minimum. And so we had to do it in a more systematic fashion so that we could meet the problem, but also we could do it efficiently to because we have other things that we work on here. You know, these we also have, you know, homicides, serious assaults, the usual things that DA's offices work with. So our system is still a work in process, but it's much better now than it was, say, 3 or 4 years ago.
If you're just joining us, we're talking today about truancy on Talk of Alaska. Right now, John Earthman, the DA in Nome, is telling us about the legal process. John, does the child's age matter? Is truancy at 9 or 11 compared to 16 or 17 treated the same?
No, for a number of reasons. One is I think once the kids hit 16, there's no obligation, statutory obligation, to get the kids to school. And I think certainly the younger the kids are, I think people generally understand that's when you want to fix the problem as early as possible. Too many of these kids are simply not getting educated at all.
All right. Anything else that you wanted to add, or?
Oh, I think it's probably worth understanding. You know, the cases that get. I know you mentioned about the folks going to jail. I think it's probably worth understanding. Those are, we start, the way the process starts is with the school really works very hard to get these kids to school. And I don't just charge someone with a crime because the kids have, you know, missed school occasionally. All of these parents have efforts with the school haven't panned out, and then they've all been charged with violations first. In that process, we give parents a chance to fix the problem, and we'll even dismiss if they resolve the problem. And then they get fined. And if that doesn't work and the problem still continues, that's when we consider whether or not a criminal charge should be filed. I mean, it's a last-ditch effort. That's what I want folks to understand. And for some folks, they just don't respond to that, even possible jail time.
And so it sounds as if there's exit points all along in the process that parents could avoid jail time if they take certain steps.
Well, that's exactly right. The point is to get these children educated because, you know, they're too valuable a resource. They're too valuable to the local communities for them to go uneducated. And as soon as parents get that done, we back out and we'll dismiss and turn to other things. Again, when you see people going to jail, those are situations where the parents simply didn't respond to any of the alternatives. And these kids have simply not been educated.
All right. Well, thank you so much, John. I appreciate you helping us out. You're welcome to stay on if you'd like to add to the conversation, or if you need to go, that's okay. We understand that also.
Okay.
But thank you so much for that.
Thank you. We'll talk to you later.
All right. John Earthman is the DA from Nome, talking to us about the laws and the legal process surrounding truancy. That is our discussion today on on Talk of Alaska. If you would like to join the conversation, you can call us in the Anchorage area at 550-8422. Outside of the Anchorage area, it's 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. You can also send an email to talk@alaskapublic.org or talk@aprn.org. In the studio with me today is Lou Pondofino. Mr. Pondofino is the principal for the King Career Center and also the president of the Anchorage Principals Association. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Lori. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, thanks so much for being here. And also, still on the phone with us is Rob Hiku. He is the superintendent of the Bering Strait School District. Good morning.
Good morning. Great to be on the phone today.
Yes, thank you for being here. So let's start with you, Mr. Piku, up in the Bering Strait area. You have two parents slated to go to jail. Maybe one of them is already there. I can't remember for sure if one of the parents is already in jail. I know the other one, is reporting in November. I know that you can't talk about these individual cases, but talk about the process that, tell us about that process that leads up to this. We heard some of the legal parameters from John Earthman, but what about from the school district's side of things? What are you doing to try to help these parents help their kids get to school?
Well, that's a good question. First, it's important to understand that the school personnel contact the parents every morning that a child is absent. And absentee reports are run weekly. Principals call homes. People make visits when a student has more than 3 unexcused absences. You know, when the child has over 5 unexcused absences, a letter is written encouraging improvement in attendance. Parents are advised of the possible legal process, that each parent may be cited, charged, and fined if guilty at 5 absences. The truancy officer fills out the paperwork and turns the paperwork into the district attorney's office when 10 unexcused absences are accrued and school personnel feel they have communicated with the parent and have everything they can do. A letter is written to the district attorney's office with supporting documentation that dates all our phone calls, meetings with parents, and providing support to the parents. And then the district attorney reviews the information and then files the charging documents with the court. And what the district attorney said is absolutely correct. I mean, these situations where parents are going to jail, those are very extreme cases where students have missed many, many, many days beyond the 10-day mark. So, our doors are always open. We're reaching out to parents, trying to help them in any way we can to get the kids to school because it's so vital that children get educated.
And what's the system that's in place for once the parent does go to jail or it gets to that point where they're heading for jail? What's the sidetrack with the student because obviously there's some problems there. Either the child is having some issues at school or they're having issues at home. Something's going on that this child isn't able to attend class or doesn't feel that they're able to attend class. So what's being done to also address the child's needs when things get to this point?
Yeah, there again, we're in a process of, and throughout this process, we're trying to investigate what those needs are, whether it could be an issue at school that's keeping the child from school, if there's something going on at school that we need to be aware of and fix and change, or if there's a situation in the home, that's when OCS is brought in to try to investigate that situation that's keeping the child from school. All along, there are steps taken to see what the needs of the child are to meet the individual needs of the child. And just the effort is just to get the child back in school.
All right. And Mr. Pondofino, you're here in the studio with us. Lou Pondofino is the principal of the King Career Center. He's also the president of the Anchorage Principals Association. How have you got to the point at your facility, your school, where you've been in this circumstance where you've had to request parents have jail time? You've had to contact the DA's office, or what's your experience in that respect?
My experience in that respect is minimal, but the process is quite similar to what's in place up in the North Slope or in the Bering Strait School District and across the state. We try a series of interventions first when there's chronic absenteeism. We know that if students are there regularly, their chances of success, obviously, are much greater. We also know that there's a cumulative negative effect for chronic absenteeism. That is, if it happens in early grades and continues, then the skill deficiencies are carried with the student as they progress through school, and it makes it more difficult for students to, I think, stay engaged. It's more difficult for teachers to address the wide variance of skill ability levels as students age. I don't believe we've gotten to the point of writing citations. I know that Anchorage has a municipal ordinance as well as the state law for chronic absenteeism and truancy. But I don't believe we've used that in our district. I could be wrong. I do know that we've used our, we don't have truancy officers per se, but we do have school resource officers in our, in all our facilities or in our high schools, and they have attendance areas, so they serve middle and elementary schools as well. And they regularly make home visits, as do school personnel when there are problems like this. And we have made reports to OCS, because we do consider it neglect if parents aren't getting their kids to school. OCS, as you know, is probably short-staffed and overworked in a lot of cases, and unless they already have a file open on a particular family, I don't believe they'll open one necessarily for absenteeism. Mm-hmm. But we're in favor of whatever works, whatever can get the child to school rested, nourished, and ready to learn.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Why are there not truancy officers? Were there at one time in both your districts? You're in the Anchorage School District, and Mr. Piku, you're in the Bering Strait District. Were there truancy officers at one time, and we don't have them now? Or what's been that the history there?
Speaking for ASD, I can't tell you that we've, in the 21 years I've been in the district, 10 in the classroom and 11 as administrator, don't believe we've had truancy officers per se, but the school resource officers serve a variance of duties, if you will, and truancy is something they do address. I just don't know that they've used the law as a tool. I don't know that it would change the behavior. We want the behavior changed. Mm-hmm. I don't know that citations prove to do that. Hopefully we'll get some good information from what happens in the Bering Straits and we'll know how to proceed, I think, a little more.
And how about the Bering Straits? Do you have truancy officers?
No, we don't have what's known as a truancy officer, the person who's designated to do this, to investigate and try to support the parents to get kids into school, is actually a dropout prevention coordinator. As has been just discussed, you know, when a child doesn't get to reading level, grade level, or math grade level by the third grade, every single year that that child doesn't get to grade level makes the chances for success in high school less and less likely. So, you know, we're putting in place very early intervention strategies so that we can reach that child who's not getting to school. And, you know, you can't teach them if they're not in school. And so our efforts are really not, we don't have a truancy officer per se. That person is really a dropout prevention officer. He's a success coach, and trying to get kids into school and trying to help parents get their children to school. Whatever's needed is what we're willing to go to that extent, because it's so important that children get to grade level. It's pretty telling when there are states out there who estimate how many prison beds they're going to need by their third grade reading scores. If a child is not at grade level by third grade in reading and math, the chances of getting to grade level by the time they graduate and successfully graduating from high school becomes less and less as the child gets older. What typically happens for kids who don't come to school when they're 10, 11, 12, all of a sudden they wake up at 15 and they show up on the school's doorsteps and they want to graduate from high school. Well, school just doesn't work that way. If you can't read, you can't graduate. Well, you can't learn to read if you don't come to school. So our efforts are really not, you know, we just follow the law, we report the absences, we turn it over to the troopers, and the DA decides on what happens from that point, whether it's an issue of neglect or not. We've turned it over to OCS. We've done everything that we possibly can. But we know for a fact that if the child's not in school, the child's typically not going to learn to read and do math well enough to be successful and graduate from high school.
1-800-478-8255 is the number out of the Anchorage area, 550-8422 if you're in the Anchorage area. You could also email us at talk@alaskapublic.org. We're talking about truancy today in schools and parents going to jail if their kids don't go to school. We did have an email come in from Sandra Quinn, who is the principal of the Diomede School. She says she wants to comment on whether parents should go to school. And she says that she knows of one parent that used the information that jail was possible to make his child get up and go to school, because he said, I'm not going to jail because you won't get up. And so she says, I think that using this consequence is going to benefit many of our students. Someone mentioned to me it's sort of like what happened in the municipality of Anchorage when the bicycle helmet law got passed for kids. It kind of takes the onus off the parents the parent can then say, look, I don't want to be fined $50, so you're going to have to wear your helmet. We don't have any choice with this. So it seems as if this could be used as leverage with parents on with their kids saying, I'm not going to jail, so you need to go to school. But I doubt that it's that simple also, that it's just an issue of usually it's probably not just an issue of a child that doesn't want to get up and get out of bed. There's got to be some other things going on there, I would think.
No doubt, Lori, and appreciate the Diomede principal's perspective. Anything that works, we'll use any tool that works to get a child to school. And that's certainly the idea that if I'm the parent telling my kid, if you don't get up, I'm going to jail, that ought to be a motivator for my child, and I hope it is. If not, you're right, there's something inherently wrong going on in the family if that doesn't at least get my child's attention.
Absolutely. I know that would scare me to death if I thought I had to go to jail. My son wouldn't have went to school. So we're going to take some calls now. Go ahead. Did you want to comment also?
I was just going to say that you made an important point. Every truancy case is unique. You know, not all truancy cases are a result of poor parenting. You know, in many kids' situations, we're dealing with parents who are really trying hard, and that little extra incentive that lets kids know that, hey, this is the law. You have to follow the law. You don't have a choice. If that's what it takes to get that child to school, I've had parents come to me and plead, help me, help me, help get my child to school. Mm-hmm. And so anything we can do to help the parent, we're there to help the parent get the kid to school.
Absolutely. And we're going to take a call now from Maria in Anchorage, and she is wondering what's taught in class. Hi, Maria.
Yes, well, I'm really wondering why we're not questioning what's being taught in class. And we look at, okay, the parents don't get the kids to school, and as long as the kids go to school, somehow they're successful, which is just not true. Most kids hate going to school, and why aren't we questioning what's going on in the classroom? What is an education if we have to compare it to going to jail? Kids already feel like it's going to jail. They hate it. So what's going on where we're not discussing the content and the direction we're leading these students in, where they would rather sit at home and throw rocks around their yard and do anything but sit in that classroom? That is, if that's what an education is being compared to, or I better go to school because my parents are going to go to jail, why would they want to go to school in that case? And until we start discussing education itself and how to lead students to think for themselves so that it's not a matter of I have to go to school because my parents are going to go to jail, it's I have to go to school because I love learning. And there's only one school I know of in Alaska, and that is the Athenaeum School in Anchorage, where students are being led to be independent thinkers. And I encourage everyone to look at Athenaeum's website and really start to think about how to help our students and our children that we're sending off every day. And maybe we as parents and as community members and citizens of America, we need to really consider what is being taught in the classroom and why do our students hate going to school.
Okay, Maria, so you're talking about relevance. What is being taught? Is it relevance and are relevant to life experience, to what children need to know? Is it being presented in a way that's stimulating? And I think that's a that's a really good and interesting point. Is what's being taught relevant and being shown to students how it is relevant to their life? I remember being in middle school and thinking, why do I need to know about all this stuff that happened hundreds of years ago? That was a long time ago. History didn't click with me until later. And now I love learning about what happened because I understand the relevant connections from the past to today and to the future. But that wasn't made clear to me. Those connections weren't. When by the time that my sons got into junior high and high school, they had much better teachers in place that we're helping them understand those relevant connections. So this idea of relevancy in what's being taught, how is that addressed? What's being done to make sure that kids are engaged in classes?
Well,
no,
exactly,
thank
and
you.
I think that's
thanks,
the,
Maria.
The answer is very simple: to ask children, how is this? What does this have to do with your life?
Right.
What is your experience with this idea? If we're given a text or an author that is telling us something that's true, whether it's math or history or cooking or whatever, they have to be able to connect it to their own lives. And we don't need to trick them and say, oh, this is how it's relevant. We need to ask them and trust that they're capable of giving us an honest, genuine answer, because they are. And I've experienced that hand in hand with my teachers at the Athenaeum School.
Okay, let's let the superintendents get in here now and hear what they're doing in their schools so that we know how they're addressing this issue of relevancy. Thank you so much for the call and for your thoughts. Mr. Pondofino, what's being done at King Career Center, and what do you know about other schools across the Anchorage School District?
Thanks, Laurie. Just a correction, the principal, not the superintendent, not interested in that position. I admire Mr. Pico up there.
sorry about that.
Good question from Maria. Relevance is extremely important, and every student should ask, what am I learning, why am I learning it, and what's my responsibility in the learning process? That said, there's going to be a lot of hard work, and it's not going to be all fun, but we do have to address relevance for kids every step of the way. I think that the district does look, Anchorage School District does look at curriculum continuously and making sure that we're offering the right courses for students, both academic, career, and technical education classes, which I obviously have a vested interest in, hands-on approaches, but not trying to trick kids. We're just adding a tool to the toolbox, if you will, if we're going to mention the reality that it is the law to come to school. And not every day will be something that excites and enthralls. And I must say that as a parent of an Anchorage School District graduate and as a principal of two schools and two different schools, assistant principal of a third and a teacher in three other schools, I do have to take exception to Maria's comment that the only school in Anchorage that does address the relevance need is Athenaeum. I know from as a parent and as an educator that that's not the case. There are many, many, many great schools in the Anchorage School District.
Well, thank you. And Mr. Piku, do you want to add to that idea of making sure that classes are relevant?
Oh, sure. The three R's of education are relevance, relationships, and results. We can't forget about results. Many of our students are two grade levels behind when they come to us in kindergarten. They're so far behind. To catch them up requires accelerated pace of learning, and the kid has to be in school every single day for that to happen. Otherwise, there's no way of catching up. No matter how relevant you make a subject, if a child can't read, the child can't read. It's just that simple. And, you know, if the child's not in school, it's the law to be in school, and we have an ethical responsibility to make sure that child learns how to read and do enough mathematics to be successful. Of course, we're always striving, just like the Anchorage School District, we're in a constant state of continuous improvement. We're reorganizing our high school programs and to include community leadership, vocational education, things that are important to kids in their community. How this prepares students to be successful in their community. Most of our students don't want to leave their communities. They want to be proud members of their community that contribute to the society within their community. But if they don't have the necessary skills to even get a job, they don't get a high school diploma, how are they going to even get a job and support their families? So I totally agree with the issue of relevance, and we're always looking for ways to make our curriculum materials more relevant, our teaching strategies more effective, and we're working on building relationships with our students. But we can't lose sight of results. We have to be accountable to results. That's what we owe our students. It's the opportunity to learn. We can't just say, oh, we made it relevant. Oh, it was relevant, but the child didn't learn to read.
And
learning to read is a critical piece to success, and we can't ever lose sight of that, of the results. The three R's: relevance, relationships, results.
I think that you've both raised very, very good points. Mr. Pondofino said, yes, it has to be relevant, but it's not all going to be fun all the time because school is work. And part of the idea, of course, is to prepare you for the life that you'll be leading and the work that you'll be involved in as an adult, and how sometimes you just have to get tasks done, and it might not be a great deal of fun. I know math was not a great deal of fun for me. It's why I make my living with words now. But it does have to be done. It's important. And relevancy is absolutely important, but it also makes the assumption, I think, that all other things are equal in this child's life. And I think that's something that we need to address also, is what else is going on in a child's life. We're going to be talking about those things, what impacts a child's behavior when it comes to going to school, and what they need to have to be prepared so that they want to be there and that they can learn this relevant material. We're going to be talking more about truancy and taking your calls as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company, First National Bank Alaska, branches in 18 communities around the state and on the web at fnbalaska.com, member FDIC, equal housing lender, Alaska Business Monthly Magazine, publishing statewide news for over 26 years from Alaska's business sector, government, and industries. Information and subscription online at akbizmag.com. And by the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend, and today we are talking about truancy and what needs to happen to make sure that kids can get to school, that their curriculum is relevant, and that they are ready to learn. And so I'm sure that there are lots of reasons that you as principals and superintendents hear from parents about why their kids aren't in school, but What are some of the factors that impact a child getting to school on time and being not just in school, but ready to be there, not half asleep at the desk? Mr. Pondofino. Mm-hmm.
It's an hour-long program. I think there are factors that we could talk about for several hours that I think influence attendance at school. Certainly there are socioeconomic issues with older students taking care of younger ones because parents are off working two jobs. There are, a myriad of other social issues, I think, that may influence a student's attendance or lack thereof. We entice students through developing sound academic programs. And previous caller talking about relevance, bringing relevance into the classroom so they can see why they need to be here and overcome the obstacles that prevent them or that are preventing them from getting to school on time and regularly.
And Mr. Piku, what are you seeing that are the big stumbling blocks for kids getting to school?
You know, as has been mentioned, we could talk a long time about the stumbling blocks in the specific situations where we have the chronic truancy issues. Many times the child has obstacles that require more services that the child needs. I've seen many reasons why kids haven't come to school. I've seen kids not coming to school because of abusive situations at home. I've seen kids not coming to school because they are themselves physically depressed, mentally depressed, whether they need help. And, you know, we reach out to OCS and try to get them the services they need, but the needs are very great within the community. And then I've just seen kids not coming to school because they are they're just being resistant and don't want to go to school. I've seen kids not come to school because there is bullying that happens in school, and we do all that we can to put bullying programs in place and work when we find out that that's happening to remedy that situation. There's no one truancy case is the same, and that's why the court system looks at every truancy case differently and decides based upon the facts that are presented to them in that process.
We're going to take a few calls now because there's lots of interest in this issue. And once we hear from a few folks around the state, I do want to talk about what happens when you have a child that just doesn't want to go to school and they're a teenager, and how we can help get those kids to class. Carolyn is calling from Anchorage about the history of truancy. Good morning, Carolyn.
I had wanted to mention, having seen many years ago, and of course it was archival film, it wasn't something I've used personally, in silent videos or silent films, the caricature of the truant officer chasing...
Can you speak up, Caroline? We're having a hard time hearing you.
Oh, I'm sorry. The historical film that I saw with the truancy officer in the cities chasing after the young men, I never saw that for the country because two and three generations ago, whether it was subsistence activities in the rural areas or just hard work around the farm, the alternative of school was a very attractive alternative. And having not learned until my 40s that my brain hadn't finished growing till I was 25 made me understand that I had needed to listen more to people who did have a mature brain, and that the things that I had not necessarily seen as relevant were something that was a good foundation. It's like you can't build a house if you don't have a solid foundation. And I think that's what, the three R's being different, what I understood it was reading, and then the misspelling of writing and arithmetic were the three R's. And now it's certainly turned to make it more of a thing where it's almost like the teachers have to do a straw hat and cane dance in order to get people interested. But believe me, if the alternative was working around a house, which of course parents can't supervise because they're not there, I mean, there are so many things that have changed, but it's essential that a child not be neglected, whether it's neglected because they've not been given enough food or they're allowed to run the streets or whatever the issue is. And if that happens, the child is taken from the so-called home, and that's not a good thing for society either. So if a parent neglected a child to the point of the child's damage, and I think not having an education is damage, then certainly jail is something that seems appropriate.
Well, I think that's an interesting point, and that kind of leads into this issue of making kids go to school. It's a different situation when they're 9 than when they're 15. At least it seems to me that it's a different situation as far as who is more responsible for that child being in class. I certainly agree that the parents have a responsibility to make sure that their kids are fed well in the evening and in the morning, and that they're allowed enough time to get a proper night's sleep. But when you have a 15-year-old that says, I'm not going to school, what are you going to do about it? What do you do about it? Because that can be a real problem. A 9-year-old child, to me, it is criminal if a parent doesn't ensure that child has an opportunity for a good education, because that's robbing them of a future. But when the child is 15 and thinks they know everything and they don't need to go to school, and the parent wants them to go, understands that they need to go, what are the parents, do they have recourse then? Do parents reach out to you as a principal and as a superintendent and say, help, I can't get my kid to go to school? What happens then?
Parents do reach out, and we reach out to parents and provide some sort of guidance. I, as a parent myself of teenagers, two who just graduated last year, and then two others currently in the system, I personally don't quite understand if my teenagers would suggest that it were optional and that they weren't going to go to school. That's, I think, a culture that needs to be developed in the home. That, no, I'm the parent, you're the child, and we can help. We can help parents with that. But other than that, I'm not quite sure how to address a home situation where the young person becomes the authority figure in the house. Mm-hmm. It's perplexing. And I don't have an answer to that, Lori.
Absolutely. Mr. Piku, what's your experience with parents reaching out with maybe a recalcitrant kid that just says, I don't want to go to school?
Well, with teenagers, like you said, there's a big difference between a 9-year-old and a 15-year-old. With teenagers, we try to contact the child. We try to bring the student in and talk to them. We try to create alternatives. Okay, what can we do differently? There's no one-size-fits-all in education. When a child gets to 15, many students are 15 years old and they're raising siblings. You know, a fellow superintendent of mine said this, and I believe it's true. Schools aren't broken. Society is broken. We have teenagers that are raising kids in their own homes, making sure that siblings are getting up and getting fed, not just in rural Alaska, but all over America. So we try to reach out to that teenager and find out what's going on. I have reached out over my career. I'm a 15-year principal. I've reached out and met teenagers that are raising their kids, and there's any number of reasons. I've had kids taking care of parents that have cancer at home, and you got to seek and find ways to meet their needs, because it's not like it was in the 50s. You know, education today is different because society is different, and society has more needs and is demanding more from the educational programs that exist within the communities, and we do anything we can to be responsive to that community.
All right. Well, thank you for that. And we're going to go to the phones again now. Cindy in Anchorage wants to talk about boarding in rural schools. Good morning, Cindy.
Good morning. I wanted to see if you touched on boarding schools versus the rural school option. My sister went to Mount Edgecombe, and my mom went to attended Chamawa, and that's two generations of my family who have both had a positive experience. And it just makes sense to me as far as the financial perspective and getting kids to attend school and have good daily skills and get them set in the right direction, because it really could take away some of the obstacles that maybe they're facing at home. And then also my other comment would be the larger picture, maybe to see if the community actually values their education through participation, whether they can be employed as TAs, or elders could make school visits, or maybe the teachers even come to the house in the smaller communities. So that's what my thoughts were.
Thank you for that, Cindy. The idea of going to a residential school where perhaps if you have a home life that isn't optimal for your development, that you have this other option. How does that come into the situation as far as helping kids have this preparedness and also the idea that making sure that if they're going to a residential school, do they have the option of saying, I want to stay in my district or I want to go to a residential school? How does that work in the school setting for the state of Alaska?
There isn't an urban, as far as I know, and certainly an Anchorage urban boarding school, but
sure.
That certainly is something that I think would help address some social ills. It'd be a solution, partial solution, albeit a quite costly one, but it's something that I think would be beneficial to the Anchorage community, any urban area, and I think it's had great success. Mount Edgecombe is pretty well renowned for being successful as a boarding school and drawing students from around the state.
Mm-hmm. And I haven't asked both of you what your thoughts are about this idea of sending parents to jail. Mr. Piku, you've got two parents now in your district who are going to serve jail sentences for their kids not attending school. How do you, at the end of the day, does this mean success, or are we still in a place that's really not desirable? What are your thoughts about parents having to go to jail for this?
You know, it saddens. Personally, it just saddens me as well as our school board when any parent has to go to jail, you know, and just for any reason. But we're also saddened when kids don't come to school and when they don't get the education that they deserve. We support the educational rights of children, and we follow the law. The law says we report. That's what we do. And then it's up to the troopers and the court system to decide what happens, at what point it reaches the level of neglect. We go through every step imaginable before we turn it over to the court system. But surely, is jail the answer? I don't know. I mean, personally, it saddens me when any parent has to go to jail for any reason.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Pondofino, your thoughts about jailing parents?
Yeah, and I think Mr. Earthman talked about it. They address the legal aspect of truancy and chronic absenteeism with parents, and oftentimes are usually the legal threat to the parent is there, is the deterrent or will be the factor that gets them to change their parenting and their behavior. And as far as sending a person to jail, I guess if it gets to a point that is needed and effective in changing the behavior, then I think I'd be in support of it. Whatever changes the behavior to get a child to school regularly from a very young age, I think we have to look at those solutions.
Mm-hmm. We have an email from a listener who says, what are the next steps if the child is still chronically absent even after the parent has served jail time? So what happens then? It's an excellent question.
It's a good question. You're right. I don't know. I'll defer.
That would be up to the court.
Okay, so there are other legal steps beyond the first jail time. I guess we should have asked Mr. Earthman that, but the question didn't come in until just a little while ago. We're going to go back to the phones now and hear from Fred in Fairbanks, who has a comment about jail being out of bounds. Fred, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Hello. Yes, I guess I'm concerned with the use of jail as either a deterrent or an incentive to alter behavior. And I follow the school district here in Fairbanks fairly closely, and I have great admiration for the teachers and the people who work for the district. And I know it's not your fault; it's the legislature. But I'm concerned with if you jail a parent, what happens to the kid? Who takes care of the kid? And if it's I do have a suggestion for what to do with a child who is chronically truant despite parents' efforts, and that is to not jail the child, but to put them in a facility where they are forced to attend school without it being punitive and without them having some sort of criminal record. And I'd appreciate your comments.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Pondofino.
I appreciate that, Fred. And I don't disagree with you. And I was talking a little bit about boarding schools, and I think that is an option for students who are chronically absent from school. Again, a very costly option for the state, so that's obviously a factor. And I do appreciate the difficulty that jailing a parent would present to a family. It's not dissimilar to Anchorage School District sanctions of chronic truancies leading to suspension from school. And it's a little bit ironic that might be a sanction that is given a student who's chronically truant from school. And we don't do that. We do it very, very sparingly. Obviously, what we're trying to do is get the student to school. Sometimes the threat of taking that right away temporarily is what gets a student turned around. But appreciate those comments.
Absolutely. And we're going to hear from Sunrise in Homer about getting kids to school. Good morning.
Good morning. What a great program, and thank you to all of you for making this possible. I just heard a show right before this on wonderful KBBI here in Homer, and it was about how teaching is changing in some colleges. Maybe you heard that too, you guys, and how it's happening that much more student involvement in the teaching process, and rather than just being little sponges for information or listening to lectures, they are being involved in creating their learning experience. And this is partially also applicable to what we're talking about here in terms of what is taught, how it is being taught. And I do think that, we are actually in a bigger problem here than just socially or community even, or community and socially, but also in terms of where our civilization is going and how we, I think, are going backwards. So it appears we are going forward in terms of our great technological skills. I was born here in Homer and raised here, and my mother would have gone to jail because I was bored and didn't want to go to school, and I was valedictorian of my class. So, I mean, that was an opposite problem. But as far as schools teaching what is relevant to a person's lifestyle, you know, and that we shouldn't be losing our writing skills. You should make sure there's a real solid basis in writing before reading can happen. Anyway, as you can see, I'm just bubbling over here, and I want to talk about, you know, prevention, being proactive.
Absolutely.
We're doing wrong, and, you know, and I just really loved everybody's call-ins. And let's see what else. I had one more thing to say. Oh, it has to do with, like, when I was growing up here, we didn't even have any vocational stuff, and we were raised, you know, really hands-on. But I found my head and my hands just splitting apart, and there was nothing for that middle ground, which is the heart, and so, which involves, of course, arts and things and having hands-on education versus just getting lost in the head. So I think it's really sad that we have had to resort to these things, and but also how wonderful everybody is caring and trying to find a new way. So I just would love to hear what anybody has to say about all this.
Thank you very much, Sunrise, for that call. We're going to take another short break. We have a lot of calls, a lot of interest, of course, in making sure that kids are in school, that they're prepared, that the curriculum is relevant, that they're learning and having a great experience. We're talking about truancy and what our response should be to it as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska, and by Condor Airlines, with connecting flights from Barrow, Bethel, Juneau, Kodiak, Nome, and Prudhoe Bay to Anchorage on Alaska Airlines, and continuing nonstop service to Frankfurt. Details at condor.com.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're talking today about truancy, and there is certainly no end of interest in this topic. My guests are Lou Pondofino, who is the principal of the King Career Center. He's also the president of the Anchorage Principals Association, and Rob Hiku, who is the superintendent of the Bering Strait District, where two parents have been sentenced to jail for their kids being truant. We're going to hear now from Ian in Glen Allen, who thinks this is a dangerous precedent. Ian?
Well, to begin with, I guess my concern with the idea of jailing parents is what happens if a parent disagrees with the curriculum? And the reason that I ask this specifically is we have some friends that homeschool in California now, and the reason that they homeschool is the school district that their kids were attending started taking students to go watch gay marriages, and so immediately the parents pulled the kids out of the school district, and the reason was, of course, they had a conscientious objection to the curriculum. So what is there in place to protect parents if, let's say, in the future something like that was done up here in Alaska where parents could conscientiously object to the curriculum?
Thank you for that question, Ian. That, you know, that is interesting. When we talk about books that parents have objections to, there's a lot of things that come into play. And the other track, the charter school track, where people can have their kids attend a school that more aligns with their philosophical approach to life. it seems that there's a dangerous precedent that could be established in that respect also if kids are only being sent down a narrow track. Certainly we want children to have a wide exposure to a lot of different ideas and ways of thinking and critical thinking so that they can make good choices for themselves. What are your thoughts about this idea that parents should be able to be protected from what they might find objectionable in school?
I think parent input is very important, and in a district the size of Anchorage, I think we have the advantage of offering several different options of education institutions for families to choose from. There's also, as you mentioned, some books or materials that might be objectionable, and we have a controversial issues review committee that parents could talk about, talk to, address their concerns with there as well. I think working through issues with parents is something that we do on a regular basis, and we do offer alternative assignments when there's a strong objection. They can question curriculum and ought to question curriculum on a regular basis, make sure that there's, and family and opinions and issues and parental guidance is something we embrace.
And Mr. Piku? Please.
Alaska has a long history of homeschool parents, and we have homeschool parents here in the Bering Strait School District, and we do what we can to support their wishes. And a lot of homeschool kids come to school for some classes and then go home for other classes. So we try to be flexible to meet the needs of all parents and to provide options. But you're talking about a different thing when you're talking about homeschool versus neglect. You know, that previous caller brought up, when you look at the last 10 years of education in rural Alaska, we can't deny the fact that school districts have been forced to funnel all of their resources into getting the majority of students through a test in reading, writing, and math. Consequently, we haven't given adequate attention to the creative arts, vocational education, and bicultural education. That's just a fact. So the issue of relevancy in school is very important. You know, thankfully this year, Governor Parnell designated a significant amount of money for vocational education. Here in the Bering Strait School District, we're in the process of building vocational education classroom space out of our own operating budget because our school board believes that strongly in relevance in education and providing students with something that they find useful after they graduate from high school, something that will help them get a job in their communities and be contributing members of their society. So all these issues are tied together.
Thank you very much for that. We are just about out of time, unfortunately, because we have a lot of callers on the line and also email from folks that are wondering about other aspects beyond bullying that might be worrying children in school or having problems because of sexual identity. And also one of the folks that contacted us by email wanted to know about parents who maybe have a lack of education themselves and are intimidated by their kids maybe knowing more than them. This is an issue that needs a lot more discussion. Maybe we'll have to visit it again. Thanks for listening. Thanks to my guests. Thanks to Dave Waldron, Josh Edge, Len Anderson, Annie Fite, and my guests, Rob Piku and Lou Pondofino. Next week, join us again for Talk of Alaska.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by Solstice Advertising, bringing creativity to Alaska businesses and nonprofits, from research and strategy to print, web, and broadcast production. Solstice Advertising, an agency for brands that want to shine. Celebrate Alaska's marine mammals and their habitat by attending Sitka's Whale Fest November 10th through the 13th. A lineup of world-renowned researchers will share their current findings and experiences during this educational adventure. Sitka Whale Fest is science made fun. Events include student art show, banquet, concerts, fun runs, and more. Visit sitkawhalefest.org or call 907-747-7964. This message is sponsored by the Sitka Whale Fest. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.